It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day, call for help. We were guides, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out.
Welcome into the show. We start way later than normal because of Lance and Eric, and I guess I can throw myself in there as well. So if I guess I'm a third of the blame for why this show begins later than we normally would. But welcome. The Astros win yesterday in their getaway day game, and now they are a smooth 8 games behind the Mariners because the Mariners dropped 2 out of 3 to the Guardians, and the Astros take 2 out of 3. So, hey. 8 games back, Baltimore in town, and they get to face, well, particularly Jake Bloss gets to face a team that has a headline on ESPN about their incredible hitting. The Orioles buried the Yankees 17-5 yesterday, and that's the lineup that Jake Bloss gets to see as he makes his first career start. So, as we talked about yesterday when this news broke, it ain't exactly facing the White Sox for Jake Bloss. So we'll see what he has tonight. Up from Double A to the majors as the Astros and their pitching injury woes have affected them in a way where, hey, one of Dana Brown's, if we want to call him a crown jewel, I mean, that's probably too quick. We'll see what he does today. And maybe Dana Brown can point to that and say, see, I know what I'm doing when it comes to evaluating talent. Jake Bloss gets to start. But yesterday, 5-3 the final. Yordan's back, and of course, Yordan came back, and that lineup looked better with Yordan in it. Hits a home run. He goes 3-for-5. Bregman goes 3-for-5, too. Those two, 2 and 3 in the order, and Yordan got the team off to a great start in the top of the first with a home run, and then it was all White Sox. Well, in the fifth inning, it was all White Sox. To that point, Arrigetti was just fine, and then he had issues. As the White Sox strung together a couple hits to get a couple runs across, and then sacrifice fly by Benintendi led to their final run. Thankfully, the Astros responded because losing a series to the White Sox, I talked about it on, I think it was on Tuesday, that losing, they had a day off, right? So we talked about it on Wednesday after their loss on Tuesday that losing a game to the White Sox when you thought this was going to be an easy touch kind of broke a lot of people. But those people are back, Sean. They went 2 out of 3. People are back. Thankfully, the Mariners struggled. So we're all back on the train of the train to 500. So Yordan came up with the hits. Altuve did as well in the seventh. They got the Astros back in. And then Hummel, who no one had ever heard of until the last couple of days, he was safe on a throwing error. And then Pena walked to push across the final run of that inning. So a 4-run inning, kind of scrappy inning, but they found a way to get those runs across. So they win 5-3, 5 games below 500. And the important part, I think, is the bullpen, the back end of the bullpen showing up. You look at some of the numbers. Now, Taylor Scott's been really good all year long. Another outing without giving up runs. But then you start to look at guys like Hader and Abreu. Over the last 15 games, and it continued yesterday, these guys have been outstanding. The ERA is down. The whip is great. The strikeouts are great. So we're getting something from those guys that we expected. Lockdown stuff. And Presley, well, his sample size is a little smaller, but his sample size over the last week, not week, but I guess a week's worth of games, if we just say 7, he's been better too. So the bullpen is responding. And they go ahead and get the win. It is the White Sox, though. That's always the caveat. The White Sox are on the other side.
Come on.
What can you say other than they beat the White Sox?
No, that's what I'm saying.
They beat
2 out of 3 against the White Sox.
It doesn't speak to anything other than you played an awful baseball team and you scrapped your way to a series win.
You know what would have been great?
A sweep?
Yeah, that would have been nice. I would have taken a scrappy sweep. Or a dominant 2-1 win to get neither
But this felt like
hanging
on by a thread.
Yeah, it does. It does not move me. I'm not moved.
I'm not surprised by your by your reaction,
especially because I have Google and I know who's next. who they're gonna have to take a crack at next.
Yes, as I said, the headline for the Orioles after their 17-5 win was all the talk was about their hitting, and that hitting's coming up Minute Maid tonight. 17-5.
That seems like a lot.
Now momentum.
They scored all their runs.
All the runs.
Jake Bloss. Now they're gonna be too tired. Either swinging that bat.
Yeah. Are they like the Astros where they scored double digits one night and then they shut it down the next?
I doubt it because they're 49-25.
Yeah, it's probably not gonna be the case.
They're 25 games over 500.
I'm gonna lean into they're hot right now. They feel pretty good and then they get to see a double A pitcher. But you know the positivity is they don't have a scouting report on them.
Yep.
And we always hear about the Astros game plan when the guys stick with it. The guys always credit the Astros game plan for being able to go get outs.
I heard that little shot right there.
Well, I mean, it's been part of the conversation throughout the year. When the pitchers stick to the game plan, they do continue to credit the plan. It's always when they decide, you know what?
And then every once in a while,
sometimes you got to pop out and show something, and then
it
doesn't go that it generally doesn't go the way it's gone for Kendrick over the last month. So maybe the Astros should just stick with the plan in place, and hopefully, you imagine Jake Bloss won't be a guy going rogue. He goes, whatever you tell me to do, I'll do it.
Yes, sir.
And we'll see if he can execute the plan.
The Baltimore Orioles scored 6 runs in the second inning last night.
The Astros didn't score 6 runs in a game against the
lowly,
daunting White Sox.
Yeah.
The worst team in baseball. They were fighting and scrapping and clawing runs across to get that win. The 7th inning was a big one for them.
You know what? You got to hand it to Yankees pitching. They kept, other than that second inning where Baltimore scored 6 runs, they kept the big inning at bay.
They held them to 11 over the other 8 innings?
Well, it was 1-6-1-0. 3.
Congratulations, I guess.
Yeah. We'll always have that 4th inning. 3-1-2-2-1. Come on.
So they would have lost the game 11-5 if not for that big inning.
Yeah, exactly.
So they still would have given up. So you're crediting them with still giving up double digit runs?
But not a big inning.
Oh, okay. As long as it's not a big inning.
Just, you know, nibbles.
Nibbles that killed you. Nibbles that still would have ruined you. And to your point,
that's on the offense. To be fair,
so you should be expected to score 12.
Score
12. You win the game. Hey, we held them to 11. Outside, you know, the 6 we gave up in that one inning. Realistically, we actually gave up 17. So that team, that hot team that's got a lot of talent and is expected to be a World Series contender, is coming. And Jake Bloss has to see if he can shut them down and continue whatever momentum you think the Astros have built from their three-game series in Chicago.
It's going to be a great story when he sits them down.
So, once again, you're confirming or you are reiterating we're not getting the Blair Henley story from Jake Bloss tonight.
No.
Okay.
That's Blair Henley. This is Jake Bloss. Every time I have to look, make sure I'm getting his name.
Yeah, because Bloss is not a name you hear very much.
I got Bloss. It's Jake that just is in
well,
one
year. Well,
we got
a Jake already on the team.
Yeah.
Jake is
a very common name. I don't know what I expected, but Jake Bloss.
I think is his name Boss or Gloss? And then I think of that Bliss show that used to be on here. Well, not locally, but on the national side, Boss and the Gloss. I'm all confused.
It is Jake, like a combination.
Yeah. But Jake Bloss up from AA. We'll see him tonight. And maybe we get a great story. Or maybe we're all tuning out and watching hockey or maybe Copa by the middle of the third inning. If that and Copa, there's a story regarding the playing surface, because you know, America, we're hosting the biggest tournaments for South American teams, and we're invited, the US and Canada and Mexico and some other non South American teams. In the first match, the pitch in question in Atlanta is crushed by the Argentinians. Doesn't make me feel great.
Argentinians, come on. Respect our fields. They're stomping all over it, weren't they?
It's always a question when those fields are brought into play, because if you don't know, is that Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta, normally a field turf stadium. And according to the Argentinians, this field, this grass field they brought in was brought in 2 days before the game, which is not a great way to do things. Not a great way to do things. And, you know, the big problem is America is filled with these giant stadiums that aren't soccer specific. We do have plenty of soccer specific stadiums because of the MLS, but they're like 20K. You're not going to put Copa America games that feature Lionel Messi in a 20. Not Atlanta doesn't even have one of those. They used to play their games on Georgia Tech's field, which was a grass surface, was a grass surface. Now it's a field turf surface itself. But you're putting it in Mercedes-Benz, one of these big facilities for football, which will be the venues to host World Cup matches. And the ones that have domes or field turf are going to have to figure out a way to not embarrass us. Greg Berhalter, if he's around, probably will do that himself. We don't need the pitches. The field service is doing it as well. So that came out. We'll talk a little bit about that because the U.S. play on Sunday. Obviously, the Euros are going on throughout the day. So that'll be a point of discussion. Kelly Stafford's in the news. Sean pointed out that she's going for Podcaster of the Year, trying to beat out CJ. And it turns out there is a backstory to her comments beyond the fact that she thinks Joe Cox is a bad boy, the former backup quarterback for Georgia. She's told this story before, but it hit hard yesterday, and a lot of men were like, couldn't believe it. I sent the clip that we'll play a little bit later to a female friend of mine, just rolled off her back. It's like, no big deal. And all the men were like, what? Can't believe she did that. Can't believe. So it just speaks to the differences. So we'll get into that. There's also some other football stuff I want to talk about, some college football stuff to get to as well, as always, because this is a show that we'll lean into that. And also, I'll tell you when we come back, well, we'll hear from Josh Hader, and I'll tell you about one Astro that people wanted to be back on the Major League roster that is back. We'll get to that when we come back. But first, let's talk about my bookie. Maybe all of our talk about the Orioles and what they are as a lineup has you concerned about Jake Bloss. It doesn't feel great to bet on your team, but if you're going to be miserable anyway, why don't you make some money? And you know where you do that? You do that at MyBookie. You can bet at MyBookie.ag. Maybe you think the Panthers close out the Oilers tonight, or you think Edmonton's on the verge of making history, and they stretch this to a Game 7. MyBookie is a place for you to bet on that game as well. So the NBA is over, but there's still plenty of things to take a look at and try to make some money. MyBookie is a place for you to do that. Just go to MyBookie.ag. Remember, the sign-up code, BET975, is what you use if you're a first-time customer. You can also use it if you're an existing customer. You can get a bonus up to $1,000 on that first deposit. Just remember, they have experts. So if you're not sure on things, MyBookie will provide someone that will lead you in the right direction. And if you're into things other than sports betting, like the casino aspect of it, whether it be poker, baccarat, or blackjack, MyBookie provides live dealers to help you out there as well. Remember, bet on anything, anywhere, anytime with MyBookie. Just go to MyBookie.ag.
Kane is in the building.
This is the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
Series wins are very important, especially right now for us. We just got to keep on getting on a roll and, you know, take one game at a time and continue to put, you know, everything together.
Good work by you, but also just the back end of the bullpen these last two games, too. What were all of you guys doing so well the last 2 days?
Honestly, just attacking the zone, trying to, you know, limit the damage and, you know, just do what we can do. And obviously we've been able to, you know, kind of hold their offense to, you know, not minimum runs. So.
Finally, Yordan Alvarez back after a couple of days off, and then he shoots one way out there. What is it like for you to watch him?
It's amazing. Just, you know, the power he has, he has such a great ability to find the barrel. And, you know, just obviously just for us to, you know, capitalize early and just continue to build off of that was huge.
Thank you so much for the time.
That's Josh Hader after the game. The Astros went 5-3. You heard him. Yordan's back. All the guys are generally amazed when he does what he does. Bullpen was good. Needed it to be. Arrigetti struggled. Didn't get through five, four and a third inning for him. Only three earned runs, but he was scuffling in that fifth inning. And Taylor Scott, who's been great, an inning and two thirds. The entire bullpen shut it down the rest of the way. I mentioned, this was probably maybe last week, that Ronel Blanco, if the Astros are going to have an all-star from their pitching staff, it would be Blanco at this point. Where do we put a guy who generally only pitches in the sixth or the seventh inning? I don't get into all-star picks, but is Taylor Scott not one of the best relievers in baseball? He doesn't pitch in the high leverage situations for the most part. Sometimes you'll see him depending on how many pitches one of the other guys like Abreu or Presley has thrown, or maybe it goes into the ninth inning in a tie ball game. So there are times when he does, but is he a possible, considering what he's been, an all-star? I just don't know if there's enough shine on him that he would be even considered.
I feel like it's a little bit better than it used to be back in the day, you know, Dale, back in our day, mm-hmm. where you just look at how many saves a reliever has, sure. and that's how you decide how good they are. And in that case, it would be very hard for Taylor Scott.
Because he has none?
Yes. That would make it very hard. He'll show up very low on the saves
on the saves leaders list.
But I want to imagine that there's more sophisticated methods of measuring how valuable a relief pitcher has been in MLB. I will say that and then say, I don't know if they use that for All-Star at all. I don't know if they care enough to use it as All-Star. Because I know with like basketball All-Star voting, like, yeah, there's a lot more advanced stats. But at the end of the day, like, people are just going to vote for who they want to vote for. Like, they're just going to vote for whoever's more popular or more, the longtime All-Star. Like, it's more easy to get your eighth All-Star than it is to get your first or second. So in that way, I don't think Taylor Scott has the name recognition or benefit of the doubt to be a All-Star pitcher. But he deserves to be.
Yeah, it looks like in his last 20 appearances, you know, he's given up four earned runs over the last 20 appearances or so. He's been, and the ERA's 1.69. He's been really good. He has been a godsend for the Astros when they have struggled with injuries and overall effectiveness in their bullpen. But I don't think he's making it. I do think he should be considered. I don't follow the Astros' official accounts. Do they say vote for Taylor, vote Scott for the All Star game?
I'll take a look. Have
they mentioned him once as a potential All Star?
There's a vote Singleton post.
I've seen that,
so
which is,
I think the door is open.
If I'm Taylor Scott and I see the vote Singleton one, there better be a vote Taylor one.
Feeling some type of way about,
yeah, if they're not promoting me. So Taylor Scott
what is this?
Yeah, why is Singleton getting the push if I'm not gonna get one? I understand he's a first baseman, but have you seen what I've been able to accomplish this year? And have you seen what Big John's done? There's a clear difference in performance there. So Taylor Scott, one of the guys you can look at and go, that's a good story for the Astros, a minor league invite. And he's been, or excuse me, a spring training invite. And he's been really, really good for them. And we'll see how he and the rest of the lineup do, or excuse me, the pitching staff do tonight against the Orioles, coming in really, really hot. So some other things that went on yesterday. Did you see Woj and his response to J.J. Redick getting the job? Woj was coping hard yesterday. He sent out a couple of tweets explaining himself because, you know, it was supposed to be Danny Hurley or no one for the Lakers, and Shams, in a less than discreet way, would make appearances on different shows and make mention of the fact that, hey, yeah, that all that Dan Hurley crap, not all that real. And the guy that Shams pushed the forefront when it came to the Lakers making a hire was J.J. Redick. And it turns out J.J. Redick is the hire for the Lakers. What it means for the Lakers doesn't matter that much. It's always been a player-driven league. And as long as you have those two stars, it'll be about what you can put around them and less so about what J.J. Redick is able to accomplish as a first-year head coach. The window for him with LeBron could be very short. LeBron is supposed to opt out of his deal, But Anthony Davis at least likes J.J. Redick. That came out yesterday. So we know one of the guys is a fan. And, well, we can probably assume LeBron is too, considering he was on his podcast. But this is Woj quote tweeting his own tweet. Tweet's not a word. Quote tweeting his own tweet after the announcement that J.J. Redick was the hire. Palinka's first conversation with Redick came at the Chicago Draft Combine in mid-May. But Palinka had a much longer visit with Dan Hurley there. And that set him exclusively on the path of pursuing the UConn coach, who eventually turned down an offer. Palinka long held an intrigue in Redick, whose talks became substantive again post Hurley. Those too many words from you, Woj. Just we get it. You need to stay at the forefront of news breaking, but the public opinion is this one's going to Shams. Shams had pushed Redick from the beginning. But Woj just did need to let us know. It was going to be Hurley, but he said no. Hurley was at the forefront, had always been at the forefront. It wasn't me doing a favor for my buddy who I wrote a book about. You can see in the background when I do my shots from home. It wasn't about that. It wasn't about that at all. The conspiracies when it comes to Access journalism.
I always get surprised by how much people care about the Woj versus Shams stuff, because to me, I just
gave me my update.
It's like
I don't
water
really care.
Off a duck's back. I'm like, yeah, sure. Whatever.
Do I really care who gets it right? No.
As long as one of them tweets out a team name next to a player's name,
we're good.
Some years and money. That's all I care about. But this summer, I hope it's the summer of Shams. I'll just say
really.
That. Yeah, I hope this is where Shams, he lets him know. It's my time now, old man. For those that don't know, and why would you know, Shams used to work for Woj when Woj had his own, I guess, like, it's called a vertical, but its own section of the Yahoo Sports website that Woj ran. It was the NBA, basically what Woj does is the NBA news section, and one of the reporters underneath Woj was a young Shams Charania.
Didn't Chris Haynes work under him too?
I think Chris Haynes too. What a coaching tree. And so now this is master against pupil.
Some would say Woj is a bit of a Sith.
I wouldn't impugn his character like that.
I'm not suggesting the Sith
did horrible things to this galaxy. A long time ago.
And the Jedi stole children from their homes.
I guess it was a galaxy far, far away. So
it's not our galaxy.
Yeah,
and the Jedi took kids from their homes at very young ages and said, hey, you got special powers. You got to come with us.
IMG Academy in Florida does nothing different.
The parents send them there. It's different. It's like, hey, your kid has special powers. You can't do anything about it. We're taking them. Hey.
Yoink.
Hey, you think child soldiers are bad? We don't care. We're going to make them one.
They're not soldiers.
Fighting wars.
The children don't fight the war.
Well, they're creating police officers because at a point the Jedi were just galaxy police.
You know what? I haven't seen the Acolyte, so I don't know. All my Jedi knowledge is from the prequels. From when they're really cooking. And when I say really cooking, I mean the last couple years before they died.
Fell apart. And everyone died, yeah.
They failed so spectacularly. Every single one of them died.
Yeah. The Jedi, recruiting child soldiers. Shout out to them. But so I can't call him a Jedi either because I think they're terrible.
Yeah. Huh.
Woj is a bit of a Sith. He can only have one apprentice at a time. First it was Shams, then it was Haynes, and then he turned against them when they went to the light side. If we're positioning them in a certain way, if Woj is actually a Sith.
I just want a summer Shams. Also, the funny part about Shams is that he'll go on the McAfee show on ESPN and be like,
"Well, McAfee said Shams is our guy. We love Woj, but Shams is our guy." You know, McAfee's
untouchable. What a tangled web.
Hey, I don't. There won't be no threats. Just tell me where Donovan Mitchell is going when he signs this deal. I hope you're all blessed.
Hey,
just let me know when it happens.
Yeah. By the way, speaking of the Woj versus Shams thing and how much we don't actually care who wins this, who just pop quiz. There was a trade yesterday, Josh Giddey for Alex Caruso. Nothing else. No other. There are two equal players in the eyes of the Chicago Bulls.
Yeah, that got people really upset.
Who had it first, Woj or Shams? Just off the top of your head, do you
know? I thought Woj had it first.
Exactly. Who cares?
I don't remember who had it first. I just think
it's a 50-50 shot.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
And if there's some Dame news, then I know Haynes had it first.
Of course.
Yes, that's what I know. So the summer of Woj or Shams and how that society is fast approaching because of the NBA's new rule. We're seeing deals being agreed to by teams, and one guy who some Rocket fans thought could be on his way because of an Instagram post or whatever it was, because he put rocket emojis in the caption, is not going to be a Rocket. We'll talk about him and what it might mean for the Rockets' pursuit of shooting when we come back.
You're listening to the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
One potential shooter off the board for the Rockets. I don't think they were going to pay Malik Monk what he got from Sacramento. But he's going back to the Kings. 4 years, $78 million. He intends to sign that deal. That news was reported last night. He was a sixth man of the year runner-up, known to be a scorer off the bench. Wouldn't have started here as the Rockets are presently constituted, and they weren't going to match that price. I'm not sure anyone was looking to pay Malik Monk that type of money, but the Kings are because of potentially Kevin Huerta or Herter, depending on what part of the world you're from and how you want to pronounce that name. He is apparently on the block along with Harrison Barnes. There are two guys that the Kings are looking to move, and it appears Malik Monk is the beneficiary of that because he's going to get a deal. We'll see if the Kings kind of clean up some of their cap sheet by sending those guys someplace. So a guy who's a scorer off the bench, that's pretty much all he is, gets a big deal for the Kings to stay with them as they try to build around Sabonis, De'Aaron Fox, and Keegan Murray. That's one of the teams the Rockets are chasing. The Kings fell apart late because of injuries, among other things. So they were a team that was in the thick of the playoff chase all year long above the Rockets. The Rockets are always looking up at them. But the Kings, depending on their moves this offseason, may be taking a bit of a hit as far as where they go in the standings. And a lot of that's all to be determined. So the Rockets lose out on him. Not even really sure they were in on him. He just sent that tweet or Instagram post with that emoji, and people got excited. So the Rockets only had the mid-level exception to give them at 12.8. He got quite a bit more than 12.8 a year.
Double it, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't really understand where people thought that or how people thought Malik Monk was going to be a Rocket.
The emoji, Sean.
It's also they're not allowed to talk to him for another 10 days. Are you accusing them of tampering?
No, he would just have interest of coming here. You know, the emoji suggested that maybe through back channels, which is still tampering, but we're going to pretend that it's not. They would have had some conversation. Maybe some Rockets were recruiting him, and maybe he had been convinced by Şengün and others.
Oh, yeah, Şengün was probably DMing him.
I'm sure. Doesn't the star player always do all the recruiting, right? And I'm sure Malik Monk would have been, oh, look, Alpi's in my DMs. I want to come here. So, no. The Kings were like, Rockets, we'll give you all this money to be our backup two guard, possibly.
Yeah. I don't know. I never viewed him as a possible Rocket even after the...
Neither did I.
Like, just say... Because didn't he say, like, I'm about to blow up like a rocket or something?
Yeah, and he put the emojis in, so people lost their minds for a couple minutes.
That's the normal saying. And then using the emoji is just a normal thing.
Yeah.
It's not like he was going to be like, you know, blowing up like a clipper. And then use a clipper emoji. Like, it's a very normal saying.
It'd be like sending an emoji to a girl you're talking to, and it's a fire emoji, and her going, are we going to Miami? You like the heat?
Yeah.
That's how... Those emojis mean different things to different people, and I don't think Malik Monk was thinking about the Houston Rockets when he used the emoji. Maybe he already knew, probably did, that a deal was coming from Sacramento that was going to make him a very, very rich man. Not that he wasn't already, but an even richer man. So off the table. Forget about him.
Finally, he's a rich man.
Finally, Malik Monk can stop living in that apartment in Sacramento, that one bedroom.
8 years in the NBA. Finally, he's a rich man.
property value sometimes. Very expensive.
Oh, yeah.
Go up. I mean, particularly in Sacramento.
Yeah, he had Sacramento. He was in L.A.
In Charlotte at one point, yeah.
Yeah, that's probably more affordable, but okay.
Yeah, I just know Malik Monk makes a lot of money, but he spends a lot of money, too.
Oh, you know that?
I'm assuming.
Okay.
If I'm going by what Patrick Ewing said way back when. So Malik,
he was teammates with P.J. Washington, so, you know, guilty by association.
I don't want to do all the guilty by association because there's another guy on that Hornets team no one wants to be affiliated with. I'm not going to do that for Malik Monk.
Oh, you mean alone. Coveted free agent Miles Bridges?
That is the guy I was talking about, yes.
Oh, he's a coveted free agent, so.
Is he?
He's coveted.
By the Hornets, maybe. So, off the table, Malik Monk, some other names I mentioned, and I'm referencing the article from Kelly Eco. This is, despite the Malik Monk, I don't know, delusion, the guys that were mentioned as far as shooting and score and just general scoring for the Rockets were the likes of like Doug McDermott and Sadiq Bey and Alex Burks and Gary Harris. So not in the Malik Monk tier. Those guys aren't getting 4-year, $78 million deals from anyone. Alec Burks came on in the Sixers series for the Knicks after all of their injuries. But he's still Alec Burks. If that's the guy the Rockets are swimming, he's fine. But he ain't getting $78 million over four from anyone.
You're upgrading off of Aaron Holiday. That's what you're doing.
Oh, yeah, we did find out the Aaron Holiday era was over. Can't believe someone tweeted that with a straight face. The era of Aaron Holiday. What?
He was only here for 1 year.
We don't talk about backup point guards in their era.
Yeah, I mean, with the Rockets have cap space wise to play with this offseason, you can't really expect a super difference maker because you're not going to get anyone that you're like, oh, okay, with this $14 million mid-level exception player, now we have upgraded off of Jabari Smith or Jalen Green or Dylan Brooks or Alperen Şengün. So you're already starting with a bench player.
Yeah, are you signing anyone who would supplant one of those guys? No.
Yeah, and we all know about the core six.
And if they draft Reed Shepard, a core seven.
A core seven.
We've heard that.
There's seven guys ahead of him in the rotation right there. And then you add in Brooks and Van Vliet and Adams. It's 10 guys.
Yeah, the improvement, if you're looking for drastically an improvement for the Rockets, will be internal and if they make a trade. Yes.
It is the biggest improvement that they can make this offseason is the same as last offseason. Is Alperen Şengün, Jalen Green, Amen Thompson, Jabari Smith being better basketball players, which is completely possible because they're all in their early 20s.
Yes, or they use a couple of those guys and picks to go get a star, whoever that might be. Those are the ways, not the Talen Horton Tuckers or potentially a reunion with Eric Gordon if he so chooses. Free agency is not the path.
There was some news about Paul George.
I did see that. We can continue to talk NBA. Yeah. We'll get to that. We also are going to talk about one of the new members of the SEC making a move that completely, I mean, it made Sean happy for reasons of like Schadenfreude. I can't believe they did it. It's a very, we're going to give Jimbo money after one year type of stuff from the Aggies did. Another team in the SEC, a new member, did something very similar. We'll talk about that when we come back.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Del Olalea Show.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now back to Del Olalea.
Welcome back to the show. Getting into some college news, let's first start with Chris Pesman, the now former University of Houston Athletic Director. He is no longer in that position. There are multiple reasons why he is gone. You know, we're not going to get all the behind the scenes stuff. We had a conversation about it this morning and some of it could be NIL based. And, you know, now players can get directly paid or at least certainly be working closely with the university themselves, when at a time before the ruling came down, they weren't allowed to get money from the school, and the coaches weren't allowed to be directly involved, which everyone knew was the case anyway. Coaches knew they were involved. It just couldn't be documented. But now that can be the case, and Chris Pesman is gone. The quotes from Renee Couture are this: Chris Pesman has ushered our athletic program through a period of incredible transformation, and we are grateful for his leadership over the past 6 years. He has been a pivotal part of our entry into the Big 12 Conference and championed the success of student-athletes on the field and in the classroom, but he hired Dana Holgorsen, so he has to go. That's not part of the quote. That is me editorializing. But...
dot, dot, dot.
Yeah, but he did hire Willie Fritz, who is their new coach from Tulane, who used to be at Tulane, and now Chris Pesman, about 6 months later, is gone. So the new AD, whoever they hire, will have a basketball coach who's great, but according to some, Kevin Sumlin is a king of his domain.
Kelvin Sampson.
I said Kevin right. Kelvin Sampson is the king of his domain. No one tells him what to do. He does what he wants, and you just go along for the ride, and rightfully so.
Yeah, the results speak for themselves, but I understand why an AD would be like, wait,
what job am I taking?
Yeah, what? I should be calling the shots.
You mean the guy who elevated this program to multiple Final Fours? He should be taking direction from you?
Well, you know.
I mean, it's part of the job.
I have a desk.
And also, he or she is going to walk into a spot where the head coach has just been hired in football. So the two major programs you've had nothing to do with, and that coach is going to get several years to try to turn the Cougs into a Big 12 contender. So maybe you walk in with less pressure. Or maybe you are someone who wants to put your stamp on things and it's not that appealing because the decision-making is all taken out of your hand for at least the next couple of years. So the U of H, a little shake up there. Chris Pesman no longer the athletic director there. Now the question would be, would Chris Pesman have done this if he was at Oklahoma? Pete Thamel is reporting that Brent Venables is on the verge, if he hasn't already, he's on the verge of signing a six-year extension with Oklahoma. This is coming off a 6-7 year, then a 10-3 year. And I asked myself, who the hell is trying to rip Brent Venables away from Oklahoma that they needed to make this move now? Who? Why? I'm sure he signed probably a 5-6 year deal initially, right? Depending on who you are. If you're Mario Cristobal, you get like an eight year deal, depending on who you are. But maybe Oklahoma was more reasonable. And they signed him to a 5-6 year deal. 2 years in, after a 10-3 year where you ended the year, what, losing to Oklahoma State and you lost Kansas. In the Alamo Bowl to Arizona?
Oh, they also lost to Kansas.
Well, that didn't end the year. They didn't end the year that way. I'm talking about
basically ended
the year. Get your shot in, Texas guy. I understood. Aren't you wearing a burnt orange shirt right now?
Yeah, I am. I don't know why. I don't know. I didn't know that this was going to be a day like this.
Well, yeah, the news broke in the last hour. So they're giving Venables an extension, 6 years worth. For what? For who? I guess great job by the agent. Who was knocking down the door? Why did you have to make this move now? Could you at least wait a year to see what a full year of Jackson Arnold looks like in the transition period? Now that the program becomes more and more his as the Lincoln Riley guys. Now, he took a lot of them with him when he went to Oklahoma. When he went to USC, but as the program becomes fully Brent Venables, wouldn't you want to see year three before you decide, you know what, he's our guy? I don't understand it. And then people in the positions of power wonder how they got themselves fired. Maybe giving Brent Venables a 6 year deal 2 years in is something we can point to. It doesn't have to be about recruiting because he's just 2 years into a new deal. I don't understand it. And then he's going into a new conference. And are you going to be – now Oklahoma's got deep pockets. You want to be stuck with Brent Venables if it doesn't go well in the SEC? Now you're questioning how long you have to stick with him because, well, we just paid him and we showed that we believe in him, so he gets a couple years. Let him get a year or two in the SEC. And if it's going the wrong way, you can make a move. Now it's going to cost you extra. But I guess they will say, hey, USC just paid us a lot of money to take Lincoln Riley away. So maybe they had extra cash to throw around, and they thought, let's hand it to Brent Venables and see how it works out.
Burning a hole in their pocket?
Yeah, we got to spend it on someone. I mean, we can't pay the Oklahoma softball coach $8 million a year, no matter how successful that program is. We got to give it to someone. Let's give it to Venables and see how it works out.
The deal still requires board approval.
Well, Brent Venables is lucky. So I didn't maneuver my way up to the Oklahoma board, or we would have had a problem.
Wait, what? We're giving guys 6 years extensions for going 16-10 for
in his first
years?
Few years for what? For who? Let's see what he's like in the SEC. A&M, you know, they when Kevin Sumlin ripped off their great year one, take a deal. So it's not like it doesn't happen, but it doesn't seem like enough has been accomplished for this to be the move they make going into his third year. Of course, Jackson Arnold could be great. That Oklahoma team could be great. They have a running back named Gavin. I ain't never seen a Gavin at running back lead a team to anything. But we'll see. Gavin Sawchuk, good player. He was a guy who showed out in that Alamo Bowl that they lost. But Oklahoma committing to Brent Venables for, at least contract-wise, a six-year extension. Man, it's kind of always about whether you win or lose, because that buyout could be bought out and he could be gone.
Yeah,
I just don't know why you're putting that type of stress on yourself.
He originally signed a six-year deal before the 2020.
So he's not even halfway into his first deal before they decided to give him more money.
He was entering year three of his original fully guaranteed six-year $43.5 million contract.
So about over $7 million a year.
Yes.
If you want to give him a raise, I would say that's silly. But if you want to give him new money, fine. But why extend him? He's not even halfway through. His first recruiting class, you know, probably some of them are transferred out, because that's generally how transition class works. Those guys aren't even juniors yet. And we're like, you know what? Let's break off another check. And then they're going to cry. Then Oklahoma's going to cry about some kid who's asking for more money in NIL. Well, he's looked at the coach and go, if he can get his halfway through, let me renegotiate my deal as well. Jackson Arnold better be good.
Gavin Sawchuk's ready with his hand out.
Jackson Arnold, if he's good in the first half of the season, he better have a conversation. Hey, I'm just following coach's lead. He's a leader of men. He better lead me to the bank. All right, we'll see. Oklahoma in the SEC for their first year, along with Texas. Texas expected to be really good. Oklahoma, we'll see. That's kind of how people are looking at Oklahoma in what feels like a year of transition, and they want to solidify their coach who's supposed to lead them through that transition. We're done with hour one. We will get to, well, this story originally happened during the college football years of Matt Stafford. It's a story that's been told a couple times. We're going to get to what Kelly Stafford said that kind of upset a lot of football players, like Sean Merriman quoted it. Of course, Antonio Brown quoted it. She told a story about using a teammate to make, you know, the first overall pick and now Super Bowl winning quarterback jealous way back in 08 or so. We'll talk about that, and we'll hear from her when we come back.